say that across the board.
You think for me,
I won't say across the board.
And I think I would get back to the
amongst friends. Conversations for the grown and sexy, where we discuss everything concerning life, love, sex, and relationships.
Good evening, good folks, and welcome to Amongst Friends. We are so glad to have you with us on tonight. You are definitely Amongst Friends, where tonight our topic is, what does it mean to be sexually liberated? That's right, tonight we're talking about being liberated through your sexuality. I'm so glad to be with you on tonight, and we appreciate you joining us. My name is Heather Owens, and hosting along with me tonight is the wonderful Jeff, Q, Joey, Deidre, and for the first time tonight, our newest host, Brittany. We welcome her to the show. And so we want you to join us. We can have you join us at www.blogtalkradio.com/amongstfriends. You can catch us on Facebook, and we hope that you'll like the page and get connected there in the chat room. And you can dial in at 760-683-2662. Again, the number to join us tonight is 760-683-2662. And you can listen in there, or you can press 1 and get in the host queue and give us your question and comments. And we would love for you to provide us with questions, comments, feedback, start an argument, start a fight, disagree, agree. We want all of that to happen tonight. So we have come to the topic of sexuality and being liberated, and I just said to Joey that I am so crazily appalled at the Urban Dictionary's definition of sexually liberated, because of sexual liberation, because it was just very shocking to me to understand how it was looked at. When I brought the topic to the group, I didn't quite see it this way. And it talks about the liberation movement and changing from societal norms into new things, and women being liberated to have sex and to have it freely, and many things come about. But tonight I think we're going to focus on the liberation that one has in their mind and their body and their spirit, and not just liberation personally, sexually, but spiritually, how God has created us to be liberated through sexuality and the freedom that we have in that sexuality. We have a call on the line, so before we even get to going, we're going to welcome Tony from Maryland. Tony, what's your question or comment? Welcome to Amongst Friends.
Hi, I was just waiting to hear other people's definition of sexual liberation.
Did you want to offer a definition, or you wanted to hear others' definition?
I want to hear other people's definition.
Okay, well, the group is here. Anybody want to jump out there and give Tony another definition of sexual liberation?
This is Q. Hey, Tony, what's going on? I think that the definition of sexual liberation is to be in the 300, to be like full in a full circle, physically, sexually, mentally, psychologically, and spiritually, to the point where all things are equal and are synced as one. And I guess part of it is not being afraid to show it as well as tell it. You know, in some instances, you see you see somebody who say that they're like sexually liberated, but what one of the, I guess, qualities are lacking? like for example, you know, somebody may say that, you know, they're this and they're that, they can do this, they can do that. But, you know, when it comes to that time to put it into action, they don't do it, or they're scared, or they're back away from that. So I guess all entities are equal and as one, and it's just one big, I guess, a circle. If that's it.
Hi, Tony. Okay. This is Brittany.
Hello.
I just wanted to kind of piggyback off of what was said. I definitely agree. I was under the impression that sexual liberation pretty much is just being comfortable with your sexuality and knowing what you want and not being afraid to ask for it. So that's just my little feel. I mean, I know that's kind of what he said, but I definitely feel like that's what it is as well, just being comfortable with yourself sexually, you know, and not being afraid to go for what you want sexually.
Also, it has to do with your sexual orientation, the choice you make in that aspect. I think sexual liberation kind of got its push early on in the 60s when women began to explore into other things and have other options. A lot of the information that I've been reading on sexual liberation had to do with, you know, back in the day, they say a lot of it started around the pill, the birth control pill,
right.
And women felt more freer with having sex and their body with the pill and the right to have an abortion as they saw fit, that was all a part of the movement. And I think in some ways, good and bad, it has affected us, it has brought us further, and it has also in some ways set us back. So after hearing those definitions, Tony, what is your take on sexual liberation, or what would your question or comment be?
I personally feel sexual liberation is knowing who you are, accepting it no matter what orientation you agree or associate with, or, you know, where your desires lie, and being able to accept others where their desires may lie.
Okay.
Without judgment.
Okay.
I find it hard to connect sexual liberation and have also find a person that says it's sexually liberated, but then they also have judgmental comments about things that others may do that floats their boat.
Well, I can agree with that to an extent. And I normally go all the way, Tony, but there's some things that people do that we probably are going to comment on. And I get what you're saying. Like, there are those who have their say about oral sex or anal sex, you know, some of those, you know, things, or people who do swinging and those types of things that people kind of try to turn their nose up, but at the same time say they're liberated.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree with that. Tony, we thank you for calling and joining us on Amongst Friends tonight. And feel free to call back in if you have any more questions or comments, because we will be here till 10:30 tonight. And we hope that you'll call in with your question and comment at 760-683-2662. Or you can meet us on Facebook, /Amongst Friends, there in the chat room, or on blogtalkradio.com/Amongst Friends. Where we are going forth in this conversation about sexual liberation. And a lot of what brought the topic up for me was really growing up in the church and taking, once I got in school and took anthropology and things of that nature, seeing how women, how we're trained, how we're conditioned with our sexuality and who we are, how it is so suppressed that not necessarily in the act of performing sex, but the natural balance of being a woman, the natural interactions, the natural energy that you have as a woman, the influence that you have, and how you use that is so suppressed because it's made to look bad, negative, displeasing, like a woman is not supposed to be attracted to a man. And so we see in our society where there are certain cultures, religion, ethnic groups, martyrs, or whatever you like to call any group or combination of people that downplay the femininity of a woman or dictate the way they dress or, you know, wearing makeup or anything like that. Have any of you all experienced that where you may see a woman because of certain religious beliefs or upbringing where they downplay their status and their natural influence as a woman, sort of suppressing it in an effort to hide their sexuality?
Hide their sexuality?
I was going to say coming from the point of just what I think sexual liberation is, and then how, you know, and then to kind of speak to Heather's question, I think to be sexually liberated, and I love how you guys kind of went into the history of it, and, you know, that's where we got the whole term feminism and sex positive feminism, and just centering around the idea of sexual freedom being, you know, essential to the component of a woman's freedom as a whole. But I think that sexual liberation or sexual freedom has expanded, you know, now that women have been liberated to feel free about their bodies, to be unashamed about the orgasm, to be unashamed about, you know, their vagina, and that they're not, sex is not just for procreation for women, but it's for enjoyment. But I think it's branched out deeper from just social and personal norms, and has grown into this whole, I don't know, this whole field of, like, people just being more sexually open and sexually free, and, you know, just with the given rise of, like, pornography and exotic dancing, exotic painting, just kind of the laws have changed from their rigid ideas of people's sexuality, and not just in their personal life, but just even into, you know, communities and society. I think sexual liberation has brought people to a place where they can now have swing, they can be swingers, they can have sex communities. Sex therapists are now not laughed at, but, you know, they're looked at just as greatly as a psychologist and psychiatrist, you know, and doctors, you know, like all of these things have kind of, they have now branched out from just women being free and having rights, not just rights in society, but rights in their own sexuality, to now men and women are becoming, you know, are able to express their sexuality and their preferences or proclivities for sex. You know, everybody is free now to, you know, kind of do that, and it's not confined. And in my belief or in my head or my view, it's not confined. Now, does that come with its challenges and problems? Yes, but I definitely think that sexual liberation has now branched off from just women's right to now men and women freely expressing themselves sexually. And it just opens the door for so many different things. And then, you know, just have I ever seen a woman, I guess, not sexually free or sexually hindered? Definitely. And I think that, I honestly think that even just going to my feelings on how I, you know, or people's feelings on how sex is treated or how sex is viewed, I think even then there's still, especially in women, there's still just some, they're not really able to be as free as they are led to believe, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does make sense. I want to die laughing because I'm sitting here doing spelling words with my seven-year-old, making sure that they're right, and I'm not spelling. I'm going a whole other direction, so Q knows what I'm talking about. Can't type that fast. No, absolutely, Joey. I totally agree with what you're saying. I think one of the things for me is that it really is concerning because, like you said, a part of the history with this is the whole feminism revolution, women stepping up to the plate to do things and to take on roles. And so one of the things with this sexual liberation I wanted to talk or wanted us to cover and discuss tonight is, do we think to some extent it's gone too far, or are we just on the perimeter of how far being sexually liberated can take us? I know a lot of times people think when you're talking about sexual liberation, in modern times it has talked more about being free to be gay, coming out of the closet, that kind of thing. But the original reference of that was women coming to the forefront, being free and justified to do just what a man could do. So in other words, a woman is free to have sex and have a one-night stand just like a man, and she shouldn't any longer be considered a whore. She shouldn't be considered loose. You know, I read an article that was done some years ago called Hero or Harlot. And basically looking at the woman, is she a hero because she's standing up for herself and saying, I'm free to choose who I want to have sex with tonight? Or is she a harlot because now she's doing the Samantha from Sex and the City? So my question to everyone is, do we think that it's gone too far in essence where women are now saying, I want to be able to get into the all-men's golf club. It shouldn't be a secret boys society. Or I want to be able to drive trucks or ride in race cars, because all of that comes with that movement of sexual liberation, women being free to do just what they want to do, just as much as a man can do when a man can do it. Has that helped us or hurt us more? What do you guys think about that?
I think it's a little bit of both, and I think you have to define it by what's the word I'm trying to get? Okay,
corporate.
Let's
corporate.
Do it like this. Yes, corporate. It's C-U-L-P-R-A-T. But
shout out.
You have to look at from which area that defines sexual liberation. For example, like I guess in the conservative community,
mm-hmm.
They may think that like women's lib, all these rights for gay and lesbian, it's gone too far. And to another extent, you know, they say that, you know, it's a slap against religious freedom and what God preaches. On the other hand, if you look at from the progressive side, they're like, go for it. Yeah, I'm behind you. Let's see what other buttons we can push to further the advancement. So I guess it all depends on your idea or your ideal from your way of thinking. It could be bad in one part, but it could be not bad, you know, from another part. That's what I think.
Okay, we have Aisha from Virginia on the line. Aisha, welcome to Among Friends. What's your question or comment for tonight? Aisha? Okay, well, we'll get back to that caller. Does anybody else have something they'd like to say on that? Has it helped us or hurt us? Jeff, what are your thoughts? Okay, maybe Jeff doesn't have any thoughts. You know, I agree with what you said, Q, that it does depend on where you come from, what your perspective is on that. But I think, you know, we can agree that, you know, now the force for women who are now saying they want to go in battle, they want to participate in the frontline fight for in the armed forces. Me as a woman, there are certain things that I respect my role as a woman. I'm comfortable in the traditional space of a woman. I don't feel the need to have to fix a car, be a truck driver, take out the trash. I'm okay as a woman, and I don't feel less than. And I think for me, although we all have the right to do certain things, it doesn't mean that we need to do them. So,
so you don't think there's the need to? I guess what it all boils down to is independence. You know, to not, I guess, rely on somebody or something to get to the point where you think you need to be. So I guess the question is, so you don't think that, you know, say like being a mechanic, you know, everybody drives a car. So when something breaks down in your car, you know, do you feel like it's up to a, you need to take it to a garage and have, like, a man to do it, or does it matter, or do you feel that, you know, screw it, maybe I could do this myself and not rely or be dependent on someone, preferably a man in this case, to do that for you?
Well, no, I don't think that it's a matter of a certain level of independence. I think we all have that. I'm not talking about, like, I'm relying on somebody or I'm needing somebody to do something, but I take offense if there is a gentleman's club, like wherever that place is where they play golf at. I don't think that it's right for women to say, we want a right to be able to get in that club, and that's segregation. That's just like saying, this is for white people, this is for black people. Like, that should, to me, that's wrong. Just because you're a woman and I can do what you can do. You can do a lot of things that a man can do, but do you need to do that? Like, what are you proving? And I'm saying that I believe part of that has to do with women feeling devalued by taking the lesser role, by taking the weaker role, and not seeing the benefit of that and not being made significant in that they feel this necessity to do something more or to do something, like you have something to prove, so I need to do something harder, stronger, or greater.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's not about, like, you're
yeah,
not
I got you.
Because
I got you.
As a woman, like, say, take Deidre. If she's there and she lives by herself, she doesn't have currently a husband or a child, so of course she has to take the trash out. Of course she has to take her car to the mechanic and get it, you know, those kind of things. So not that she's not independent to do that, but I am almost positive that if she had a mate, a husband, that they would take on that role. And as a woman, she'd fall back and accept that and appreciate it.
Okay, I see your point. I see your point. Okay.
I agree with you, Heather.
Okay.
I feel like certain things are meant for guys and certain things are meant for women. And like she said, although women, we do have that independence, but it's like, let the man play his role, let the woman play her role. And I think it has hurt us and helped us in some ways because it's offered some other opportunities for women. Those who want to be truck drivers and those who
you know, want to play football and are able to do that. But I feel like some things are just not meant for us to try to take on. I mean, taking out the trash is normal, but it's like, I feel like in today's society, it's so normal for guys to do the sports, women to cook, you know, men to take out the trash. So I definitely feel what you're saying, Heather, on that part. And that's what I have to say so far.
Okay.
I mean, do you get, because, and you know, much of what I was saying, what Brittany was saying is that, I think the dynamic has been that the value that has been placed on us in our roles has maybe not been significant, and women were suppressed. And coming out of that, just like any group that's oppressed, you can't go from one extreme to not being able to do anything to wait to go to another to wanting to do and be everything. And so as a woman who, when you're suppressed, you try to break out and just be anything and everything instead of doing, you know, the little bit and taking your role a little bit further. Instead of breaking out and saying, not only do I want to come out as a woman and be able to speak up, but I want to do this, I want to do that, like going full throttle. That's not always the best thing.
Okay, I was about to ask you a question, but you answered it already.
Okay, we're good.
Okay, so, hey, everybody. We have Aisha back on the line. Aisha from VA, how you doing tonight?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
Great. Welcome to Amongst Friends.
Thank you. I was calling, and I really wanted to chime in on the last kind of few comments that you all were making just regarding, you know, the whole women in the golf club thing and kind of certain roles and how things have changed. And just being from the generation that I'm from, as I'm getting older now, and I'd say, like, the past decade or so, there's been, like, an extreme role reversal and certain roles that men would traditionally have and women would traditionally have. And I think that that is the driving force behind women trying to do some of these things, you know, like trying to get into male golf clubs and making an issue out of it when they're kind of looked at as not equal or not good enough to get into these things. And I do think that just because of a culture change and, like, the whole role reversal and women just doing so many more things that we didn't do previously, and honestly, I think especially within the black community, you see that a lot more women are getting, you know, really awesome jobs and moving into CEO and leadership and management positions. And now you're seeing more stay-at-home dads and dads taking more of a family-oriented role in things that you would traditionally see a woman doing, you know, men are kind of doing, and women are kind of stepping up and kind of making a difference in how we're perceived, and even within society, like with the whole 50 Shades of Grey thing and that craze, like you're seeing women be more prone to express sexuality and just different things and kind of take a different step. So I think when people see that happen, that shift happening, that they're more prone to try to follow suit and say, okay, well, if they're doing this, I want to do that too. And I just think it's the whole change in roles, and traditional male roles are no more, and traditional females are kind of being changed. So that's my take on the situation.
Well, thank you, Aisha. We absolutely appreciate your question or comment, and please stay with us and call back in if you had another question or comment. And I definitely agree that, you know, roles have changed, just like the dynamics of what, or the definition of what we call a family has changed. And I think over time that should evolve. My concern in this liberation of sexuality is that we don't allow it to change so much that it becomes harmful to us. And in that manner, you know, I respect the fact of those women who have stepped up to the plate and are presidents, CEOs, and running companies and are able to be educated on a certain level and do things dynamically in the earth, because we need that. And in that aspect, that's a lot of where it has benefited us and helped us. But on the flip side, in some ways where it has harmed us, where we become sexually liberated in this article where it talks about hero or harlot, it talks a lot about women being free to do the one-night stand, to be the playgirl like men have so traditionally been, and free to have sex, set the terms, when and how. A lot of the articles that I read and some conversations that I had talk about when the pill came out, it kind of released women because they had to rely on men for protection via the condom. And I guess back in the day, I'm sure diseases were out there, but the primary concern over time was really getting pregnant, not so much a disease. And so once the pill came out and abortions were a choice and all of that, women became freer. But in the same sense, I want us to kind of dive into that of how we look at our sexuality, because if we say much of what Tony said earlier, that we're sexually liberated, but then we make judgmental comments about women, such as Superhead or video girls, it's almost like we're talking on both sides of the fence. And I say that because on one hand, we say women are sexually liberated and they can do with their bodies and what they want with their bodies when and how they choose to. But on the second hand, we'll say, why is a woman belittling herself to be in that video and be half naked and dance like that? Or we'll say, why are men degrading us when they're talking about is our bodies and booties and breasts and things of that nature? How do we stand on both sides of those comments?
I think, Heather, that's where defining sexual liberation is so important, but I guess we'll find ourselves fighting different, you know, because it's kind of hard to measure fact against opinion when it comes to people defining what sexual liberation means to them. But just standing, you know, I think for some people there's the positive aspect of sexual liberation, and then there's the negative aspect. Excuse me. So, you know, positive would be men and women just saying, you know what, I'm free, like I'm not bound by, you know, kind of the roles that I was taught growing up, or this whole fact that, hey, I'm not supposed to enjoy my nakedness or see myself as naked, like all of those things outside of like marriage or outside of a committed relationship, those things are wrong. And someone discovering, you know what, okay, there are some boundaries, there are some things that I need to watch out for, but it's okay for me to enjoy my naked body. It's okay for me to love who I am, to love who I choose to love, whether they be a man or a woman, you know, whatever. I think those are kind of the positive aspects or the positive perspective of sexual liberation, or like, you know what, because I'm married, I'm no longer ashamed of sex, and it's guilt-free, and now me and my wife are free to, or my wife and, you know, or husband or whatever, we're free to explore our sexuality, our physical sexuality fully, because we, you know, there's no longer the guilt and shame attached to it. But then you have the negative aspect, and it's just like, well, these women or these men, not just women, but men and women that degrade themselves, quote unquote, that sleep with 100 different partners, that participate in pornography, that, you know, are a part of all of these communities where sex is just no longer this gift or this treasure, but it's just like a free-for-all, you know, Superhead or women that participate in group sex or bukkake, where it's a whole bunch, there's like 100 men standing around and just shooting semen on them. These things, people don't view that as sexual liberation, but rather they are still in bondage because they are kind of feeding into this notion that women are sex slaves or women are to subjugate themselves to any proclivity that a man places on them, or men are dogs, they're trifling, they're dirty. So they have not discovered liberation, but rather they have further pushed themselves into bondage and fooled themselves into believing they're liberated because they can do all these different things. And so I think that's why we get that battle, because, you know, there are different definitions of liberation, but then there's the positive and negative perspective of, okay, I'm liberated, but I'm also understand boundaries, or I'm liberated and there are no boundaries. There is no right and wrong, and just trying to find who stands on the right side or who is right in that aspect. What is liberating? Is it sex without shame, or is it approaching different gender roles without boundaries, or is it I'm going to let 150 men shoot their loads on my face and sell it for lots of money?
To piggyback on what Joe said, I think it's two sides when it comes to sexual liberation. There's the for us side, which is, you know, women furthering their work advances as to, you know, becoming CEOs, you know, becoming truck drivers, becoming roles that were for men that women can try to attain. There's also the aspect that's called for me, or it's about me. And those are, I think, the roles where Joe just said, you know, they are the superheads of the world. You know, the those that, you know, take sexual liberation and use it for their own personal, I guess, escape. And they do it for, I don't think they do it for the prestige, but they also do it for the money. And money seems to be the main culprit, C-U-L-P-R-I-T, for you know, those type of women who go down that road. Do your thing. Do your thing, but I think what's missing and what separates the two is the general like way of thinking. You know, one aspect is, if I could do this, you can do this too, just work hard, you know. And there's the other side that's like, you know what, I'm going to get my men love sex, I'm all about making this money. So to me, there's like two sides of this. One is positive. Well, both are kind of positive if you really look at it. But, you know, one side is morally good, and one side is just morally bad. But it all falls under the umbrella of sexual liberation.
Okay, but morally, based on whose morals and standards? Or is that based on social norms?
For the sake of argument, let's say social norms.
But you know what? I also just don't feel like, honestly, I just don't feel like you are liberated. If you have a whole bunch of sexual partners, and, you know, like you have all these sexual conquests, I don't think you're liberated. I do think that you've just detached yourself from social norms or the guilt and shame perspective, however you want to word it, but I don't think that's sexual liberation. This is just my opinion, but I honestly feel like you're liberated when you can have a committed relationship. And I'm not saying marriage, that's what I chose, but that you are committed to one person and you guys are exploring each other's bodies and you're protecting each other and you're sex is a sacred thing between the two of you, and in it, you explore with one another. And I don't know, you care for one another. I don't think that you're liberated if you're out there just sexing anything that walks and talks or gets wet. I just don't think that you're liberated sexually. I just think you're just doing what you want.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I don't want us to confuse the choice to be promiscuous because we all have rights and choices. So you're not liberated because you're recklessly you're not a NASCAR because you choose to speed down the beltway.
Right.
It doesn't fit into the parameters of being a NASCAR driver. You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't want us to just drop promiscuity and having a whole bunch of sex with a whole bunch of different people into being sexually liberated, because I think being sexually liberated is about a mindset where not just what you do behavioral is affected, but how you think and how you view yourself. It makes you more accepting of who you are. It makes you remove suppressions that not just came from people, the church, society, but we have our own individual suppressions that we put on ourselves. You know, like there's some women who don't necessarily like their body, but their husband is 100% attracted to them, but they only want to have sex in the dark. You're not sexually liberated if you can't stand to see yourself or for somebody else to see you in the light naked.
Yeah.
Tony, who has a question or comment, can we pull Tony in? Tony, welcome to my friend.
Hi. I 1,000 times agree with what you just said about, you know, you're not liberated if it's the mindset. It's not your actual sexual acts.
Mm.
But I agree with Q. There are a lot of people, and this now I'm talking men and women, out here feeling that they're sexually liberated because they're getting paid for it. No, you're not sexually liberated. That's your job. It's your job that you chose. That doesn't make you liberated. The liberation comes, you leave that job. Do you leave all of that job there? Can you go home and be intimate? Can you be naked? I'm not talking physical. I'm talking mentally, emotionally. Can you be naked with the one person that knows everything about you, up, down, good, bad, ugly, and everything, and they still love you? Because if you can't be naked with who you're sharing your bed with, being intimately in love with someone, then there is no sexual liberation.
I absolutely agree with Tony 100%, and that's why I wanted us to definitely look at, you know, the sexual liberation thing is about suppression, and it's not just in how we behave or in our activity, but it is a sense, it is a effect of the mind and what's in our heart and what's inside of us that dictates our behavior. And you're 100% right that not only is it a person's job, but I believe that when you're out doing that to that level for money, however, it is nothing more than another form of suppression, because you're at the mercy of somebody else for a benefit to yourself, most definitely, but you're still at the mercy. I mean, we all go to work and are at the mercy of somebody. So I'm not putting it in the aspect of saying, like, you're a slave, but you're at the mercy of somebody else, so it's still not a freedom in that, and you're there to please and not necessarily to be pleased.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Ooh, girl, reach. You better preach, girl.
Don't do it, kids. Don't do it. And so I think when you're sexually liberated and you're dealing with somebody and that, who also is sexually liberated, you're both taking in, how do I please this person, how do I please myself, and how free am I to let them do the work with me? How do we work together? How do we co-labor, collaborate on this to make it successful? So let's move the conversation there about this liberation within the mind. I threw out there, you know, the fact that if you can't stand naked, you know, people, women who like to have sex in the dark, you know, you guys know that I've been on this, how do I say it, lose weight, feel great, I guess is what I call it, thing, and not for any reason other than to just be healthy. I've been overweight all of my life. I was born 13 pounds, so I've never been small at all. But I knew and realized once I've been in a car accident and as I get older that it'll be much harder for my bones, my muscles to carry me. If I don't lose weight, it'll be much harder for my heart to stop and things of that nature. Yes, I was 13 pounds at birth, and my mama had me. So I knew that I needed to do something. So in my preparation for doing that, one of the things about me that those who are close to me know, and why I bring this up, is that I grew up in a family where being naked was not something that was looked down upon. So having brothers and sisters, like walking from the bathroom to your bedroom, like it wasn't a must. You must have a towel. You got to put on a robe. Like, it amazes me how people are. But if I'm somewhere and I need to change clothes and people are there, I don't get, like, all uptight and feel like, oh, my gosh, I need to, you know, cover myself or I need to go high. Like, if I'm going to change my – well, y'all know. I'm
going to
change my clothes. I'm just
going to
change
my clothes. No, I don't know, but I won't lie to you getting naked in front of me. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you. You don't worry about it.
Hey, you were
like right. So to me, I don't get it, and I understand from, you know, we've all been in church and heard, you know, when Adam and Eve go and hide themselves and Jesus comes back to the garden, is like, where are you? Now, he knew where they were, but they weren't in the place where he had met them every day on a regular basis. And he's sort of like saying, where are you guys and why are you ashamed? And they're like, we're naked. And I was like, you always been naked. Like, why are you now just, you know, what did you do? And so that's like the tree of good and evil. But what I'm getting at is that we have these images in our head and our mind of what is right. And it is a form of suppression. If you can't look at your body, and I'm not saying go parading through the streets naked, but I'm saying be free enough to look at yourself, let your mate look at you. That's another form of sexual freedom. How else do we have, how else do you see us being mentally suppressed in our sexuality? What other forms and ways do you see that manifest? Anybody?
Ask the question one more again, Heather.
I know, because y'all are bumping this Facebook and Twitter. I know it's just taking you out. The question is, what other ways do you see our mental liberation, sexual liberation, suppressed? That it, what other ways do you see that manifest in our actions?
You,
and our behavior?
You know what? I really think that self-control, and I had just posted this in the Facebook group, but I think self-control is the ultimate proof that your mindset is of sexual liberation. And again, this is just my opinion, but I just feel like people that are free don't have to flaunt it, don't have to overexert or overuse or exacerbate their freedom. And it's kind of the same thing that I feel about young people who become emancipated from, like, their parents or something like that, but they get out there and they use their freedom to make something of themselves versus the ones that just go buck wild and end up having to get back under their parents' roof because they were unable to harness the freedom that they have for good. And so I just feel like a sexually liberated mindset is one of temperance or self-control. So I'm sexually liberated, and I don't have to go out here and have a whole bunch of partners, or I don't have to go out here and constantly state how sexually liberated I am because I'm trying all these new positions, or I'm doing all these new things. Like, the mindset is of self-control and self-awareness. I'm aware of my sexual being. I'm aware of who I am. I'm aware of what roles that I believe I want to play. I'm aware of, you know, where I'm going and what I'm doing. And it's not this whole thing that, you know what, I'm not free until I break free from social norms. Rather, I live in social norms. I welcome them, but it does not change the fact that I'm liberated, or it doesn't change because I live within boundaries, or because I understand self-control, that you know, that doesn't negate my freedom sexually. And I just think that, you know, self-awareness and self-control are two big points of a sexually liberated mindset.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anybody else have a comment on that? No, basically what Joe just said. There's nothing to reiterate. Joe just put it out there.
But you know what, Heather, and I also think that for women who have that sexually liberated mindset, that they don't mind giving themselves to the man that they're in relationship with, especially sexually, especially, you know, because someone made a comment in the Facebook group that women should take a knee. And I, believe me, I'm a part of that campaign. I just think that men and women, it should be an equal thing. I think if men want their women to go down on them, that men should go down on their woman. I believe in it. I believe in the 69 position. I think that is a position that puts both people in great power. It empowers mm-hmm. both individuals, but the oral orgasm is powerful, and so I truly believe that sexually liberated women have that mindset to please, and they not feel subjugated by the willingness to take a knee. I just don't, and men too. Men being willing to get down there and eat their woman out. I think that is a part of being sexually liberated, that it's not nasty or I'm not subjugated because I'm pleasing my, you know, if you're a woman, you're pleasing your man, and if you're a man, you're pleasing your woman in that way.
Well, I agree, and Joey has taken us into another area, and I do appreciate that, Joey. We love you to join us. Press 1, and that puts you in the queue to come on the line to give us a question or comment. And to come out of the queue for questions, comments, you press 1 again, and you can continue to listen. You can also join us on Facebook, /AmongstFriends, and post your question or comment there, or at www.blogtalkradio.com/AmongstFriends. We'd love to have your question or comment and you join us tonight. As Joey was talking about being liberated to perform in the bedroom, and I don't want to confine sexual activity to the bedroom, because part of that liberation is wherever, however. But I think where you get that level of liberation is also walking outside of fear. And two things that I think we forget with liberty and freedom is that we let fear overtake us sometimes, so we don't do things because we're afraid of
failing at it or not doing it properly or not doing it to someone else's pleasure, and then also going too far where our liberty or our freedoms infringe on someone else. But sticking to the point that Joey made about being free to perform oral sex and being free to try new things in the bedroom, I think we've all had some sexual encounters in our lifetime. And how would you all say, how would you describe those moments and times when you wanted to introduce something new to your partner or your partner wanted to do something new? Where was the fear or the inhibition in those for you all? Anybody? Jeff?
I'm sorry, what was the question again, Heather?
In sexual interaction with your mate or partner, what was your experience like when you wanted to introduce something new or they wanted to introduce something new out of the liberation format? You know, let's try something, let's be free to do this, but fear or anxiety got in the way of that. How did you manage to work through that?
It was you take baby steps. You coach your partner into, you know, first you start with getting them to say that they are open to the experience, and then you deal with, you know, their fear of actually being in the moment. If it's having sex outside, if it's, you know, or being in a public place. So if you're gonna do something like that, then you can take baby steps. You know, you definitely have to show your partner, yes, I'm introducing them. I don't want to go full bore and not care about your feelings. So if you take the necessary baby steps, I think you'll be fine. Your partner will get more comfortable, and the fear will diminish, and there will be more joy of the pleasure of the moment.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Joey,
as a newlywed, I don't expect you to dive in and put yourself on blast, but how creatively would you suggest, you know, newlyweds and new partners coming together, especially in a relationship where they may have waited until marriage to have intercourse? How do you, you know, liberate yourself in something that you really haven't experienced, and so you're sort of a novice?
I definitely think, one, because even though I had sex before I was married, I had a lot of sex before I was married, and definitely a fact. Definitely not a fact that on the spiritual side of my life and the side that I take up, you know, I take very seriously, I'm not proud of it. So I'm not saying it like, oh my gosh, yeah, I had a lot of sex, I'm proud, you know. I'm not saying it in that way, but I'm saying, I can say it the way I said it because I'm not bound by that. You know, I've been forgiven, you know, whatever. But when I got married, the sexual experience was definitely different because for the first time, there was no guilt and shame associated with it. So I think that the, you know, having to learn all over again and be okay, you know, because after sex, before I got married, it was definitely like, you know, it was the enjoyment piece physically, but just spiritually, just I felt horrible. But now coming to grips with, you know, like if now that I'm married and I'm having sex, I am fully free. Is still something that I have to learn to, and, you know, to get used to, so to speak. It didn't take me long to get used to. But just for context sake, you know, just for context and conversation sake, you know, it was something that I had to learn. So I think that people who wait. I think that two individuals who wait for whatever reasons, whether it be spiritual or just personal reasons, that they wait until they're married to have sex, I think they're in a better position. I know this sounds crazy, but I think they're in a better position because they don't know, they don't have this whole view of guilt and shame. They don't have this whole view of right and wrong. It's simply exploration in its purest form. And so I think if they if two people are openly communicating, Heather, if they're openly willing to explore one another both intimately, both physically and sexually, I think that those newlywed couples will be more would be more empowered to try new things, to do different things, to say what's right, to say what's wrong, and they have that innocence or that, you know, they'll have that innocence and that empowerment that I really truly believe, and again, this is my opinion, but what I really truly believe God intended for married couples to fully explore one another and it be no guilt and shame. Like there'd be no ill, nah, that's gross, oh, no, I'm not doing that, oh, no, my mouth is a place of praise. You know, it's fully free to explore one another and enjoy it, because I think sex is meant to be enjoyed. There should not be one person just laying there saying, God, I can't wait for this is over so I can get the scandal. Or, man, I can't wait for this is over because I get more horny and more excited listening to Amongst Friends every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. 760-683-2662. That's why I feel sexually liberated, and not why my wife is just letting me pound her, or why my husband is just thinking he's doing something and I'm going to fake orgasms. I get a real orgasm listening to Amongst Friends every Wednesday night.
So I just think that,
you know, people who wait, and this, again, this is just my opinion. I don't care if you agree with me or not, but I just think that people who wait and then they get married, I think they're more open because they don't have that, they didn't spend their whole life worrying about whether it's right or wrong or I need to repent and all that extra stuff that just comes with it.
Well, Joe, I have a question. What difference does it make, or what is the difference if they wait or not? I mean, if they was having sex before, let's just say, for the sake of argument, you and your wife were having sex before y'all got married.
Okay.
Not saying that you did, not saying that you didn't. That's not my business. But my question is, what difference will it make? I mean, to wait until you get married again. I don't see the correlation of waiting. If the both of you were sexually liberated before y'all got married, then what's the use of saying, you know what, baby, let's wait from this point on, let's wait until we get married and we can do this stuff all over again? Why?
You know what? I think for people who have a spiritual lifestyle or who have strong spiritual or Christian beliefs, they understand that waiting is not just something that is spiritually commanded of us, but it's a personal conviction that they take on. And so I think for those individuals who decide to wait because it's a personal conviction and it's a spiritual conviction, I think they don't lend themselves to the lust and to the, you know, the shame that comes with after they've enjoyed sex, they feel guilty. And so I think for those individuals who choose to wait, who choose to, you know, wait until they get married, I think not knowing the guilt and shame behind it allows for more exploration freely. And then those individuals, Q, who maybe don't have maybe aren't Christian or maybe who are Christian but don't have those spiritual convictions about sex and sexuality or sex outside of marriage, I think those individuals, if they decide to wait off of their own just because they want to, here again, you just don't have that, okay, this is what society says you have to do during sex. This is what my friend said to do. This is what the blah, 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 blah said to do. This is what the porn tape said to do. This is what this book said to do. And here again, they have their own, it's their own motivation. It's their own empowerment, so to speak, self-empowerment to explore their sexuality without preconceived notions. That is the phrase I've been looking for this whole night, and it finally came to me, without all the preconceived notions that honestly I believe hinder not just exploring one another sexually, but I think it hinders sexual liberation.
I'm at that stage in my life where, I'm not married, and I've had premarital sex. And there are times, and most times, I actually do feel bad, and I feel guilty after I do it because I know it's wrong. And I always find myself repenting for having sex. And the crazy thing about it is that, you know, I've battled with myself whether I should wait till marriage, you know. But then it's like, well, I've been doing it, so why stop now? But I do believe that, you know, eventually once I get married, hopefully I'll understand, you know, that spiritual connection that, Joey, you have with your wife. I'm sure everything will definitely change, but I am at that point where it's like, okay, well, I've been doing it. So it's like, you know, why stop now? You know, I don't know when I'm going to get married. I don't know when, you know, my boyfriend pops the question. I'm in a committed relationship, but it's like, why stop now? You know, I've already been doing it. So,
you have an issue 69.
Let me ask you this, Brittany. Mm-hmm. You know it's wrong, or were you taught that it was wrong?
Both. I was taught that it was wrong, you know, to have premarital sex. And I know that it's wrong, but I think that me being the person that I was being curious, you know, and it wasn't like all my friends were out having sex. But I just think that the people that I hung with, you know, we were just curious to figure out, you know, see what it's about. And I think that's why, I guess that's why, you know, I started doing that. But I was taught that it was wrong. You know, I was, and I know that it's wrong. To this day, I know, like, I shouldn't have been doing it. And I probably still shouldn't be doing it.
I got taught the same thing, and I, as soon as they laid that lesson plan out, I asked, so what's going to happen if I do it? And I never bought that argument of the premarital sex thing. Never bought it. I've never, in every sexual act that I've engaged in, I've never ever thought that it was a bad thing to do. And the reason why is because if it is written someplace that it's wrong, and the reasons why it's wrong, I was still given by the same person who inspired those words that it's wrong, that I have free will. I have free will to live my life. And I took that road.
Clap, clap. There you go, Jeff.
I mean, again, I'm not here. Whenever I talk, even though, you know, a lot of people may think that I talk to make people come to my side or my way of thinking, I don't. But I think the truth of the matter is, or what I believe to be the truth of the matter, let me say that. I think a lot of people who grow up in their parents, even if your parents don't say, you know what, it the Lord says don't have sex outside of marriage because it's wrong, you know, even if their parents just told them, you know what, I just want you to wait until you're old enough to handle it, or until you're old enough to understand what you're doing, or you know what I'm saying. I think even people who just have their parents say that, still, you know, when they go out and they do these things, or when they go out and they have sex before, you know, their parents think they're ready or whatever, I do think, one, it's just curiosity, and two, it's just that move to insert your own independence, no pun intended, but to insert your own independence. But here's the thing that I think we miss is that we go into it with preconceived notions, or we go into it with, okay, with many the mindsets of many different people, and we don't really have sex, or we don't explore our sexuality based on, one, based on fact, two, based on understanding, but we do it just simply out of curiosity or out of peer pressure. And, again, I think we miss what the sexual experience is supposed to be about. And I say that because even before our generation, even before right now, there was a time when women didn't even have no idea that they could have sex for pleasure, you know, or if they did, they had to keep it to themselves because, you know, it was wrong or it was viewed as witchcraft, you know. And so I think that I truly believe that people, one, if you're going to do whatever the hell you want to do anyway, so no matter what people try to convince you of, you're going to make your own decisions. But here's kind of what I would suggest to people is that, one, you obtain knowledge, that you gain a full understanding of what you're doing before you make a decision to do something, and not just do it based on because you're curious or based on peer pressure, but do these things after gathering all the knowledge that comes behind it, and then be willing to be held accountable for your actions, and also be willing to take all the consequences that come behind it. Because whether you're spiritual or not, there are consequences to having sex, whether you are married or not married.
It's easier said than done because it's like kids are having sex, let's say around 12 to 16 years old. So their mind frame isn't, they're not going to say, you know what, let me think this out. It's like what you said. It's purely curiosity and peer pressure that's going to make them do that. And it's not, I don't think a 12 to 16-year-old have the mind frame that says, you know what, let me think all this out. Maybe not a small percentage, but I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. That whole mind frame is not in their minds. They just want to satisfy that curiosity and the peer pressure.
My thing with that, and it's a whole nother conversation. I recently did a blog called The Truth About Sex. And the reason why I did it was this whole argument about indulging in sex out of curiosity, which may be true, but like Brittany said, being taught, like Jeff said, being taught that sex prior to marriage, premarital sex, is wrong. Just because you say it's wrong, just because you call it a sin, does not stop people from doing it. And the reason why 12 and 16-year-old kids do it, they do a lot of other things too, but it's at a much lesser rate. They're not just running out trying crap, because they see the results of it. They see the effect that it has. And I think we have to stop telling people, stop telling kids, stop telling adults, men and women, don't have sex because it's a sin. Don't have sex before marriage because it's not the right thing to do. Abuse your body. No, what you need to tell people is the truth, that your mind is not strengthened for that, that there are consequences to engaging with someone sexually and intimately, that not only are there consequences and results and feelings that you have, but there's also a level of work that you have to put into that. There's something that you have to contribute to that you don't have at 12 and 16.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's going to leave you feeling if that person is not someone who loves you and cares about you and respects you.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like a person on crack, you know, I had a cousin who was very addicted, and I couldn't understand for the life of me. Our whole family went to counseling. And what the counselor said was basically, once you do it one time, you keep going back for that same high, that same high, that same high. And we see the same thing with sex. You're looking for love. You're looking for the missing father. You're looking for companionship. So you keep giving your body, giving your body, giving your body, chasing that first high, chasing that ideal, chasing that fantasy. And it's not there. And that's why I say it is not the truth about sex that it's a sin, or that it's bad, or that it's nasty. That's not what's true about it.
Now, how do you learn? Going back to something Joey said, the thing that popped into Joey's head that eluded him all night was preconceived notions. How do you learn anything without a preconceived notion? How do you educate yourself on sex to be able to make the decision to go into it or to do it? Everything that you are learning is going to give you a preconceived notion. So you should learn honestly,
the way it was designed for us to learn about sex is within the home, seeing a loving relationship between our parents. And it is the responsibility of both the mother and the father to have that conversation of sexual interaction, intercourse, from their perspective. Because I think a mother enlightens her son as to what a woman's expectations are and the needs and where your focus should be. And a father gives them, you know what y'all say, men, you know, go hard, go strong. So I think that's where you learn, that's where you receive your education. And just like anything else, nobody has to teach you how to be bad. Some things you just pick up on. Sex is one of those things. We're coming close to our call time for tonight, so we hope that you get your question and comment in. Join us at 760-683-2662 or at blogtalkradio.com/amongstfriends. We do apologize if you're on the line with us tonight and you're hearing a bit of static or some unclearness kind of stuff. We do apologize. There have been a few technical difficulties, but we're so glad that you chose to stick it out with us and join us, because we are proof positive that this is the best 90 minutes of your week. Tonight we're talking about sexual liberation, and as we continue in this conversation of being sexually liberated, in some of the background reading that I did for this, we've kind of hit on it with talking about premarital sex, being it right or wrong. Some of more recent articles have moved towards the debate on whether or not premarital sex is wrong. And I have not done enough or have a full breadth of knowledge on anything to say what is definitely fact. I have my own opinion, and I'll be more than happy to share that. But Joey, Jeff, Q, Brittany, Deidre, let's dive into this discussion, talking about whether or not it is wrong, because we know for a fact that if you get married and get a marriage license and you go to get a divorce, the judge is going to ask you, have you had sexual intercourse? And if you have not, the marriage has not been consummated, so it is not valid. We all know this to be true, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, correct.
At the same time, we know it to be true that Jesus met the woman at the well and said, where's your husband? And she says, I don't have one. And basically Jesus says, you have several. Because she had consummated the relationship with that. So my question is, do you need to have the marriage to have sex, or do you need to have sex to have the marriage?
You need to have sex to have the marriage.
I think you need to have sex to have the marriage. I mean, what if you get...
You need to get it. You need to get it in.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's like I do agree with the have the sex before the marriage, because it's like, what if you wait for that person and it's like it doesn't turn out to be, I guess, you know, what you expected it to be, or you're disappointed. So, you know, I get it's wrong, but it's like. And I hear it a lot with, you know, talking to my peers or whatnot. It's like they're scared to wait until marriage because they don't want to get into a situation, okay, well, I'm with this person for the rest of my life, but the sex is awful. Like, I'm not happy. And, of course, there's ways to improve that, but it's like what if you just find yourself in that situation where it's not what you expected and it's just it's not there. You're not loving it. That connection with your partner is not there.
Right. That is a factor. And, you know, traditionalists will say you got to have faith that God going to bring y'all out and you got to teach him and show him what's with. Like, trust me, they'll give it to you. But I think it is important, not so much the test drive, but much like you said, I believe within the confines of a committed relationship. This is just my own personal one belief. It ain't the belief of before anybody inboxes me on Facebook or sends me a text message. It is not the belief of my pastor, my church, or the preachers in my family and all the people that I know, and my mother would probably be appalled. However, I believe that within the confines of a committed relationship, two people determining to be together, to respect one another, lacking a marriage license, that... That's as much like it is in a marriage, except you have the license. I mean, it's, you've committed to one another and say, I'm going to respect you in this manner, I'm going to be with you in this manner. I'm not seeing where the default comes into play. And furthermore, in our society, the likelihood of a whole lot of women getting married is very slim. And do you just not ever have sex? Like women who are getting married for the first time at 45 and 50 years old, do they just not have sex?
Of course not.
Until they get married?
Of course not.
Again, I don't think we're going to, of course, everybody's going to have their own opinions or whatever, but, and y'all said so much, and I just really wish we had more time, so I'm going to try to make this really quick. But I think to speak to what Brittany was saying, if you get into a marriage and you didn't have sex with the person and the first time you had sex and it was bad, practice makes perfect. That's all I have to say. And there are people who have had lots of sex, lots of partner, and still experience bad sex times. They have times where sex is terrible. So practice makes perfect.
Oh my God.
The other thing is, what? What?
That's dark. Okay. No, dude. If you do it, okay, there's the first time. Okay, the first time is kind of whack. Okay? You do it the second, the third, the fourth, the 50th, and the 90th time. And it's still whack.
But that's because, and here again, if... And this is why I said people need to just stop going off of sex is putting a penis inside of a vagina. Or it's not just that. So if people are not willing to engage in full exploration, then of course it's going to keep being whack. But you can't just go off because you don't know how to. You never experience something that's going to make you experience. Because that's not true. I know experienced people that still suck at having sex. I don't think that experience makes you a sexual connoisseur by you being experienced.
It doesn't make you a sexual connoisseur, but at the same time, Joe, okay, let's take Brittany, for example. Okay, Brittany's boyfriend, he's everything she wants. She wants in the man. You know, he works hard, he makes good money, he takes care of her, loves her to death. But the sex is like a D average. They did it. The first time was booty. The second, third, fourth, fifth, 100th time, it's booty. It's butt.
Okay.
Do you really, really think Brittany is going to stay in that relationship?
I think that what Joey is trying to say, though, Q, is that the way that just because you have sex, it's not just a dick and coochie situation. It's communication.
It's
so much more than that, but it's about communication. So if I'm having sex with you and it's garbage, hopefully you're going to say, okay, babe, okay, just like when you're giving your girl, okay, so we're doing it, where you're laying down, whatever that is. And then
it's called missionary.
Yeah, okay, missionary. So they're doing a missionary, and you're not liking the way it feels. You tell them to turn it over so you can hit it from the back, okay? And then you're hitting it from the back, but then you want to try it on the side. Tell them to move it. It's all about communication. But if you're just humping, and you're just humping, of course it's going to be garbage, but you got to be able to communicate. That's all I got.
And here's my thing. Okay. I just really don't think we should push or put out there that you have to have at least a couple of sexual experiences before you can get married, because I just don't, or that you got to test drive the car before you drive it. I don't subscribe to that mindset, just basically of my understanding of sex and sexuality. It is not about how many times you do it, but it's about how you do it. And I truly believe
both.
I don't think it's both. I know many married people who have waited before they had sex, period. And I know people who waited to have sex with one another, and they have great sex lives. And it does not go, because every person is different. So just because you might have had sex with Bonquisha doesn't mean you're going to go over to Sally and have good sex with her, because she's a totally different person. She's a totally different, yes, they both have a vagina, but it's totally different. So you have to explore differently with each person. And if you go into this mindset that sex is only good if you have experience with the person, then you have already forfeited half the knowledge that you can obtain. I do not subscribe to, and it's just my opinion, so we don't have to agree, but I just don't subscribe to you have to have sex in order to know how to have sex. I just do not believe. I do not believe that.
I agree
with you
in that you don't have to. I don't think that I get what Q, and I do believe I understood Brittany's perspective, is that what if? And to me, that goes back to the whole fear. We've had several conversations, and I'm sure we will again, about being free and being in a loving relationship, because for me, personally, intercourse is more about the mental connection and where you go with things.
But
it is something
that's
physical. Like, it's not hard to have orgasm. You
can
do that by yourself.
You
by your daggone self.
That's true. That's true. But if you expect your partner to give you that same orgasm and he doesn't, and you do it all type of positions all too many times, it's a problem.
That's not a problem that cannot be resolved. There's nothing, and I will repeat this, there is nothing about sex
that you cannot teach a person, and the only thing that will keep them from doing it is their own personal resistance, and that's a bigger issue than sex.
Okay.
Do you think waiting until marriage at least will help build that connection between the two?
I think it's important. I think for some people, that's the only way they get that connection is through not having sex and not being distracted. I mean, I've been in relationships where I didn't have sex the first 2 years with a guy. We were together like 7 years. Now, did he probably cheat on me terribly? Absolutely.
Not all men, Q. Not all men. Don't be all. Not all men. Not all men.
I would call his name, but he's probably listening. He knows I'm talking about him.
Call his name. Don't be scared. It's sexual liberation.
Here's the deal. If you have two people and they decide, okay, hands off, we're going to build this relationship on everything but sex until we get married, then you have two people.
Can I interrupt you one moment? Hold that thought. Keep it running to the end. I want to tell everybody thank you for listening to Amongst Friends tonight. As you can see, we are close to being out of time. We appreciate you for joining us this week for Amongst Friends. We will be back here next week at the same time with a very interesting topic, just like this one, and we hope that you'll join us and invite someone else to join us again. Thank you. Next Wednesday at 9 p.m., you can stay on the line and continue in our after the show. As you can see, we will continue this conversation. Thank you for joining Amongst Friends. Join us on Facebook, facebook.com/AmongstFriends. Blog Talk Radio, you can go back and listen to this show or previous shows each week. They're kept there. Thank you again from everyone here at the Amongst Friends family. Go ahead, Jeff.
So what I was saying is if you have two people and they get married, so now they have the Sex 101 starter kit. She don't know what being up in her field. He don't know what putting it down is supposed to be. And from what I hear Joey saying is that the very basic of dick in, dick out is only the mere beginning of your wooing your woman into sexual action, of you wooing your man into sexual action. There's the whole thing of, like you guys said, it's the communication. It's all the things on the outside. It's the foreplay into it. It's the holding after it. It's the let's walk to the kitchen naked and eat and then go back to doing what we just did. All of that plays into part when you have that starter kit. But there are so many things that can go wrong with having that starter kit. Somebody could want more faster, and therein lies a problem. Somebody could. If you can say that all of this greatness can blossom out of having this sex kit 101, then you have to acknowledge that there are problems that could erupt from that. And some of those problems could be you could want more out of the experience or want more in the experience than your woman. You might want that faster than she's ready to give it to you. Now, I'm not
okay, but that's something you can work up to through communication, Jeff. All I'm saying is I just don't believe that you have to be sexually active and experienced in order to be good at sex. And coming from that perspective, I don't believe if Brittany decided to make the decision to wait with her boyfriend or whatever, just to wait to have sex until they're married, I'm not going to say that they would have bad sex. And I'm not going to say that they will have great sex, but here's what I am saying is that if they're both willing to work at it, they can become good, unless you just mentally retarded to the point that you just cannot get the concept at all, or you both have been closed, you're just both closed off to the experience, or three, he don't get hard and she don't get wet.
Or you decided in your mind that I'm not going to do it, even though I know that's what you want me to do, I'm not going to do it that way.
Right.
Like, sex ain't nothing that you can't teach somebody.
Right. I just don't think you have to have had your bottom knocked out, or you have 29,000 notches on your belt in order to have good sex because you waited. I don't think just because you wait that you're going to have bad sex. I just don't believe that.
The magic number is only one. The magic number is that one orgasm to give her. And if it's not happening, all that other stuff, all the other positions, all the other whatever, all the extra times, it's not going to be worth it. If she
that is another misconception, because there are many times that women have not had an orgasm and still enjoyed sex. Now, before you make a comment, let me just say that I believe that every time you have sex, I think both people should have an orgasm, because that is the magic gift of sex. But I know plenty of women that have enjoyed sex and did not have an orgasm. Now, did they enjoy sex better when they had one? Yes. But here's the thing. There are times where there are men that have not had an orgasm and still enjoy sex with their woman. So, that's another preconceived notion that every time you have sex, you're supposed to have this mind-blowing orgasm. That's not true. That isn't a true statement.
Like I said, it only takes one. And 9 times out of 10, it better be hers. It better be hers. It's not... I'm good.
So basically, what I'm hearing is on the side of the fence where Q and I stand, I think, is you need to test drive the vehicle. You need to have a repertoire in order to know how to please.
Show me the carpet.
That's for men and that's for women. And what Joey is saying is that if you decide to wait until you get married, you can through hard work and through communication. I'll say communication first and hard work. If it just ain't clicking right, you can get to the point where you know how to please, and you do.
Yes. I just believe that. I mean, because there are natural born people or people who are naturally gifted at having sex, and they can have it 100 times or they can have it that one time and be amazing. And then there are people that got to practice it. Then just the same way there are people that can get on a bike, never rode it before, get on it that one time and be amazing. And then there are people that have to work at riding that bike. So all I'm saying is I just don't agree with the mindset or the teaching that you have to have sex in order to be good at it, and that people can't, that they should not wait, but they should test drive. I just don't subscribe to that form of teaching. I think that if you have young people or young adults or even adults that want to wait, that we shouldn't be like, okay, don't, but at least try it one time. If that's the decision that they want to make, fine. But I'm just saying, don't teach that, because that is that's a misconception. It's not true for everyone. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that what Jeff and Q is saying is wrong. I just don't agree with the teaching, and that you don't wait before you get married to have sex. Test drive, because that's the only way you're gonna know whether or not the sex is gonna be good. I do not subscribe to that at all.
I just don't believe that. That what you're talking about, don't teach. Like you're saying, don't teach what Q and I are saying. However, we are demonstrating it at a extremely large number, and what you're talking about needs to be taught. And what you're talking about needs to be taught, and it needs to be taught enough that it outbalances what we demonstrate. So you're talking about something that's probably, you know, like anybody talking to Joey is going to give that. You're going to give that lesson. That's cool. Anybody talking to me and Q is not going to get that. But what you're talking about, I think, is more of a thing that would come out of church, more that would come out of ministry type groups who are doing their missionary thing, trying to help the youth to give them.
But see that, but Jeff, you're wrong in what Jeff, you're actually wrong in that, because the people that I teach. Especially even in my professional career, they're not Christian. They're not all Christian. They're not all saved. My job is to empower them to whatever decision they make. They're empowered in that decision. So if I have two people that come to me who are getting married, or who are, you know, married, or, you know, wanting to get married, and they say, you know what, we want to wait, but we have people telling us we have to test drive each other, but that's not what we want to do. I'm going to encourage them or empower them to make the decision that, listen, sex is not about how many times you have ridden a person or how many times you have test driven someone. Sex is about exploration and freedom. So if you decide to wait, that does not curse you to bad sex when you get married, because you waited. That does not curse you. So it's not coming from just a church thing, because spiritually, yes, I do believe that you should wait until you're married, because I believe that is where sex is you're able to freely explore fully, because you don't have all the extra ramifications that come with just having sex outside of marriage, especially as young adults. So on the spiritual side, yes, I do believe you should get married. But just on the outside and on my professional beliefs, I just don't believe that someone has to have lots of sex to be good at it. I just don't believe that.
And I get that, Joe. But what I'm saying is, my thing is, it's the side that Q and I are talking about is demonstrated more so in the actions of different people, a great number of people, and how they live their lives out today. And somebody would have to come and talk to you, somebody like you, to get what you just said. I mean, so basically, if I'm sitting here with a group of kids, I can say something as simple as sex sells. They've been getting fed that, Joe, since they was old enough to realize they was watching a commercial.
But ignorance needs to stop begetting ignorance. Like, that's kind of the point of sexual liberation. Ignorance just needs to stop birthing ignorance. Stop feeding ignorance. I just really just feel like if you're just telling people you got a test drive, oh, you know, why buy the cow when you can have the milk for free? Like, all of that stuff just keeping people. That's why people don't get married. That's why people don't don't respect marriage. That's why people don't even respect sex, because they got all these stupid, dumb notions that sex is just about a whole bunch of commerciality, marriage is about, no, you can have a full-on, glorious life without ever getting married. You know, all of those things, it's ignorant. It's just ignorant when you tell people, okay, if you decide, Jeff, if you have decided to test drive your fiance before you got married, then guess what? Okay, that's your choice. But you can't turn around and just be like, nah, you know, because I test drive my wife and it was good, so then I decided, you know what, she was good enough to marry because she knew how to put it down in the bed. Good sex does not keep a marriage together. That's one, because in every marriage there's going to be some time when you're not going to have sex.
But it doesn't hurt.
Here's the thing. I understand conversation, but we need to be careful when we say words like, you know, ignorance and stupid. And the reason why I say that is because I am in the same place that you are in as a married man. I am in that place on my own path. So you cannot tell me that the path that I took is ignorant.
I didn't say that the path that you took was ignorant and stupid. I said saying things like you got to test drive your person to see if it's good before you make your decision, or saying things like why buy the cow if the milk is free. Those things are ignorant and stupid. I did not say the decision you made, Jeff, was ignorant or stupid at all. I never said that. But making statements like you have to test drive a person before you marry them, that's ignorance.
What I'm trying to get you to understand is you are saying that the words are ignorant. The statement is ignorant. However, people around you have lent themselves to those statements, to those words, when you say ignorance, when you say stupid, you trample on the truth that I declared for myself to get myself through my life, through my tribulation, to get where I'm at.
I don't agree with that, Jeff. To call if it is his opinion that to prescribe to that format, to take that as a equation for determining whether or not someone is suitable for marriage, to say I need to test drive it before I buy it, or whether cow is free, just because you use that in your efforts to get to your marriage, does that make it no more or less stupid to me? And that isn't saying anything less of what you decided to use, because the super soaker is stupid, but it's made somebody millions of dollars. So you test driving it or buying a cow or however you want to see fit to it, it's gotten you to a happy marriage. It's still stupid to somebody.
But not only that.
What Joey is really saying, or what I'm hearing him say, is to put out there in the forefront that it's the responsibility of people to test drive or to have sex, that you must have sex before marriage, or that you shouldn't marry somebody unless you have sex with them because it may not be good and you might be miserable. To put that out there in the air is crazy, and I get where he's getting that from. And it's not just a church thing.
No, it's not. Y'all gonna stop blaming the church for everything. It's not. It's not that.
and still have terrible marriages and still don't stay together.
Exactly. And my and what I said, what I preference.
You twirling your coochie, a man needs you to put them pots and pans together on the stove, do some
floor,
make up that bed, wash out that bathtub, and know how to put on some nylons and a red dress. Popping your coochie ain't gonna keep him happy, guaranteed.
And I also need you to talk to me, know how to argue, know how to pay some bills. No, like my thing is, and what I preference before I said ignorant and stupid, what I preference is to teach. To teach people that notion, to teach children, to teach young adults, to teach people those sayings and beliefs are ignorant and stupid. To teach. Just like going out here, when people go out there and tell children to sell drugs or to steal cars for fast money because the white man ain't gonna give you nothing. Guess what? That's an ignorant and stupid teaching. It's the same thing in my book, in my opinion. That's stupid and ignorant when education out here is free for the most part. It's free. At least the first 12 years of your education is free if you choose to get it. And I know people that teach those ignorant, stupid things that it's okay to go out there and get fast money, fast cars, and fast women, and they just breeding a nation and a generation of ignorant, stupid people that further perpetuates the destruction of our society. And I feel the same way when people walk around and tell people, yeah, you tell little boys that they need to have as much sex as they can so that they can be a man, and never teach them what it means to be a man. Guess what? That's ignorant and stupid to me to teach a child or teach a young man that notion, or for somebody to teach a woman that laying on their back is a way to keep a man. It's ignorant and it's stupid. Now, if you subscribe to that in your own personal life, that's on you. I'm not going to say whether it works or it doesn't. I'm not going to comment on whether it's ignorant or stupid. But if you teach it, it's ignorant and you're stupid. Why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free? You sound dumb. That's why people ain't in committed relationships for ignorant and stupid teachings like that. Why buy the cow? That pissed me off. I'm sorry.
There are things that are put out there. There's so many times when the same way you can say, I hear what you're saying, but we can all turn around and say the same thing about math class in the free education in the school building. Okay, when I'm old, when I'm making money, I only need how to count up and reduce. I might not be the person using complex math, but I understand you're going to teach it to me. Hopefully I'll hold on to it. I can feel as a kid learning that it's stupid for me to have this when all I need to do is learn how to count money and subtract. I need to know how to, when I'm making it and I'm losing it or I'm spending it. So that's why I said it's the whole thing with, you know, the word, you know, the words ignorant and stupid. I mean, because if somebody, like I said, there are certain lessons to life that were given to me from the dudes on the street, the brothers on the corner. No pops around. They gave me what they feel I needed. Jewels of their knowledge on the street dealing with whatever. It was for me to pick and choose. So if I choose one of these teachings, one of these jewels, and then, you know, I wholeheartedly go into it and it makes my life what it is, then I can take that on as a truth. That's something that it works. It's something that works for me.
But
so,
Jeff, do you go out and teach other people that thing? Even though it worked for you, do you go out and teach that to, like, would you teach that to your daughter? That, you know what, baby, don't let the man buy the cow if you're giving the milk for free. Like, would you go out there and teach that to your daughter?
No.
See,
that's
what I'm saying.
My personal journey will shape the lessons that I give my children. Plain and simple. I think that goes for every parent. Now, parents can choose to pull something from Shakespeare. They can choose to just teach out the Bible if they want to. But if they choose to give the kid I turned out okay. I'm not robbing, I'm not stealing, I'm not raping, I'm not pillaging. I turned out okay.
But what about the ones who learn that and they go the opposite direction? And for every one, Jeff, there's ten robbing, rapists, pillagers.
Right. But what I'm saying to you, if I decide to take what I learned and put that into my kids, and you just called part of my life lesson, part of my life truth, ignorant and stupid. It was something that was ignorant and stupid to be taught, but that ignorant and stupid worked for me. Lessons don't all the time work for everybody. So they work. Whatever I chose to use worked for me. You cannot tell me that if I give it to my kid, it was a gamble for me to have it.
But why would you gamble on your children? That's my question. Why would you gamble on your children if it was a gamble for you and you know it was a gamble?
Joe, the gamble is everything your mother put into you growing up, the gamble comes in that when you turn 18, you decide to go batshit crazy and go kill somebody, or you go off on somebody on the mental.
But honestly, I'm not seeing how someone being taught don't buy the cow if the milk is free, how that is I just don't see how that's a good teaching to pass on to anyone. Like, I just don't – I'm just saying I don't see that as a good teacher. And, again, if you were offended, Jeff, because I said the teaching was ignorant and stupid, then I'm not – that I don't apologize for. But if you felt that I was calling you ignorant or stupid, there is no way, shape, or form that I believe that you, Jeff, are ignorant or stupid. I don't believe that at all. Silly, yes. Crazy, yes, but ignorant and stupid, no. I do not believe you are either one of those things. So if me saying that made you believe that, then that I apologize for. But the teaching of you need to have sex before you get married, before you make the decision to get married, I just think that is ignorant and stupid. I'm just saying. I just think that is. I also think there's a lot of other factors that are more important before you make a decision to get married than whether or not sex is going to be good or not.
I mean, yeah, we ourselves need to stop talking about stuff, and I guess, you know, and it falls on me too. We need to put out there that we are talking about a component about the whole decision to go forward with something like that in somebody's life. So when we talk about it, we can go down a rabbit hole because we sound like we're only talking about it as if it's, you know what I'm saying? It's almost like we're saying that, yes, we all agree that it's just, this is just one thing and we're going down a rabbit hole on as why people make this decision. We clearly all know that there are a number of factors for a man to propose to a woman and for a woman to say yes. But sex is a part of that. So, I mean, it's the I want to be with this woman for the rest of my life. We haven't had sex yet, so when we get married, sex is going to be this great thing for us. Or it's basically we've been in this relationship for 3 years, and yes, we've been having premarital sex. It's great. We're great on a sexual level at this point. We're great with paying bills. We're great with how we want to raise kids. We're great with how we treat our families, how our families treat us. We're great with our friends. We got great jobs. Now we want to take it to the next step. I want to propose to this woman. So we all know that. So we need to stop acting like ourselves. We need to start saying stuff like that in our conversation.
I think the other thing that is, though, because I preference, before I made the ignorant and stupid comment, I preference it with teaching. And honestly, regardless if we come to an agreement on this set of teaching, I do believe that there are irrelevant, there's ignorant, there's stupid, there's irresponsible teachings in this world. And it's not just a matter of whether it's street versus the church, whether it's school versus common knowledge. I just really think that there are ignorant, stupid, irrelevant, dangerous teachings out there. And whether it works for somebody or not doesn't make it any less stupid or any less ignorant. I think that's my greater argument rather than just the argument on whether you should have sex before you get whether you should have sex before you propose or get married or whatever. I think my greater argument or the greater passion that has brought out is that there are teachings, whether they work for someone or not, that are still ignorant, stupid, irrelevant, and dangerous. Because, and just for example, and then I'll drop it after this, but just for example, slaves had to teach their children the slave mentality. And it worked for them. It kept them alive. It kept them from getting beaten. But if another slave didn't come out of that ignorant thinking and those ignorant teaching and say, you know what, freedom is better, then we would probably still, and it never took hold, then we would probably still be slaves. So my whole point is there are ignorant and stupid teachings, and sometimes it just needs to be pointed out. So that people can know that, you know what, that we shouldn't be teaching people this tomfoolery. Whether it's right or wrong, church or street, there's just some things you just don't need to teach people. Because I don't agree, and I'm not saying that everything that I learned street was ignorant or stupid. Now, I don't believe that. But there are a lot of street stuff that was ignorant and stupid, and I was like, you know what, that's just dumb, and I am not going to follow that, and I'm not going to teach nobody else to do that. So that's all I'm saying, that at the crux of where you and I are disagreeing is that I just do believe whether it worked for somebody or not, there are just some teachings that just shouldn't be taught.
Okay. I got you.
But again, I do want to make clear to everybody that's listening, I do not believe that my man Jeff is ignorant or stupid at all.
I want to say, Brittany, you did great. If you're not snoring right now,
still here.
You did.
No,
you did
do very good.
I was nervous, guys, but thank you for making
you're
me
welcome.
Feel comfy.
All right. All right, I'm about to blow, done.
Good night, y'all.
Good night.
Good night.